hopefully people will be able to create professional level songs on mobile, right? Like that with AI tools, it's already happening these days. The thing that is going to be the separator, right, is like the story of the artist and who they are and the narrative. Again, in our world is evolving away from songs being the core part of an experience of listening to the artist to people, consumers, creators, fans, wanting access to the artist at all times, wanting access to their story, their narrative, and why we need to be looking forward towards the opportunities as opposed to necessarily focused on the challenges of new technology.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. Now, you're probably listening to this podcast because you want to learn about Web3, but have you ever considered how to actually use it in your job? At MDRX, they build digital products using Web3, blockchain, machine learning, and AI, but with purpose as the foundation, never just tech for tech's sake. So why not download their cheat sheet? It's packed with top tips on why your business should give a damn about Web3 and see whether Web3 is actually right for you in your job, your business, or even your career. So whether you're looking to optimize your business strategy or leverage tech to stay ahead of the competition, MDRX have got you covered. I'm really excited to be working with them because they live and breathe Web3, and I love that they see tech as an enabler and not as the end goal. And because they're the tech consultancy arm of law firm Mishkon de Rea Group, they know everything there is to know about the legalities of Web3. And if you've ever tried to launch a legally compliant NFT project, DAO, anything like that, you'll know it's really complex and you need a trusted partner. Go and download their cheat sheet now by clicking on the link in the description. Before I introduce today's guest, who's a leader in the music industry, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to all of you, our amazing Women of Web3 community. Thank you for downloading the podcast, for binge listening to the last season, and the fact that we've got 5 stars on every platform, thanks to all the reviews you've been leaving recently. Amazing. If you haven't dropped us a star rating or review yet, it's so helpful, honestly. And speaking of which, we've also been reviewed in The Guardian, so welcome to the new listeners who found us there. The journalist wasn't completely won over by all things Web3, but she did say, and I quote, "This is a lovely show and I recommend it." So that's going on my tombstone, thanks. Moving on to today's episode, we're speaking to music and Web3 legend Warna Ruxandra. She's the Chief Digital Officer at Warner Music Group, which includes their Web3 offering. So while Web3 is touted as a way for independent musicians to grow their community, I thought it'd be interesting to hear the record label point of view as to what the opportunity is, fandom, and of course, building community. So without further ado, here's Warna. Welcome to the show, Warna. Could you start off by saying who you are and what you do?
Sure. Hey, guys. Hey, Lauren. Great to be here. Thank you for having me. So I run digital at Warner Music Group. I'm the Chief Digital Officer at Warner Music Group, and that encompasses quite a few things. Ultimately, my team is tasked with working to understand what the future of music and media consumption looks like, that landscape looks like. And then we drive strategy for the company. And the way in which we drive strategy is by negotiating deals that we have with our partners. So those deals are anything from, you know, the Apples, Spotify's, YouTubes of the worlds, where we sit with those companies and define how our partnership takes place over the next couple of years. So marketing, economics, data, et cetera. And then we also obviously are focused on what's new and what's next and driving incremental value for our artists and for our songwriters. So that is anything from, you know, the world of Web3 to a lot of the work that we're doing on the artificial intelligence side these days. And then I also lead mergers and acquisitions, so M&A at Warner. And we've got a small fund that we invest in entrepreneurs out of that fund, as well as doing, you know, broader deal M&A. Yeah, I think those are the key things.
I mean, you must be pretty busy.
I've stopped sleeping.
Oh my God. Before we dive into more about what Warner's been doing in Web3, and including, I'd love to hear about those investments, but our usual habit that we're also continuing with season two, because people seem to find it really valuable, is starting off with a quick jargon buster. So could you tell our listeners, what is a POAP?
Sure. Yeah, of course. A POAP is a proof of attendance protocol. It's sort of like a digital version of a tour t-shirt or a ticket stub or a playbill. But unlike those, your digital token can be publicly authenticated. So creators and brands can hold can give special access to the holders of those POAPs. So creators could give access to fans that attended a show in this virtual space. They can give access to those fans for special channels, special, you know, community-based loyalty points, etc. I think it's a really interesting way to engage communities that are already attending, you know, shows that that these creators are taking part in. We were the first official corporate partner for POAPs. We've done POAPs with a number of different tours, including Oliver Tree, Tiago PZK, Kevin Gates, and we're using similar technology with some NFC chips, with some merch that we're going to be putting out over the next year or two. So really cool, you know, a Web3, very specific, attainable Web3 NFT, attainable tool that we're using throughout kind of our artist cycles these days.
Yeah, it feels like you as Warner have been really busy on that front. I've been interested to know, how have people responded so far?
Yeah, it's been really interesting, right? Like the the world of Web3 is evolving. And so there are so many interesting ways that customers are thinking about how they hold POAPs, and especially because the POAP is related to an experience that the customer has, we've found that the take up and the interest has been really, really there. What we are focused on is obviously then taking, you know, once the POAP is in the holder's wallet, then how do you actually drive value? How do you actually drive value for that community that's holding the POAP? And so what we think about with POAPs is kind of a one of those key starting places to define the community, because they are often coming to a show, define the community as this community of lovers of an artist, and then hold them together and then try to create value for them. So it's definitely one of the key pieces, a starting place for a lot of the communities that we're thinking about building. And we found the uptake to be really good. Again, it's about creating that value then. Like once you actually have the POAP, it's about ensuring that that POAP creates real opportunity for the holder of it.
Yeah, it feels like it's NFTs or broader kind of digital tokens, POAPs, etc. are an amazing opportunity for connecting super fans, right? It's like a whole new digital way of engaging with the artist that you love.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in the music industry, right, like if you take a look back at what has and how the industry has evolved, what has happened in streaming is that ultimately the super fan or like various levels of fans aren't really being catered to. We've got an industry today that is more is focused on scale and access, right? Like the way in which we monetize fans today is by access points. You can pay a subscription of, you know, $10.99 these days to get access to all of the music that you want, or you can listen to an ad and get access to quite a bit of music as well. But what happens actually after that access point? I think that's the place where engagement and fandom really comes into play. And I don't think the music industry has done a substantial enough job understanding how to create engagement within these spaces. And then, of course, like create value for the artists and songwriters once you create the engagement and the value for the community, right? And so I think a lot of the ways in which we think about how to actually monetize fandom, how to create fandom and create value for fandom, we think about Web3 as like a key tool to that future ecosystem that I think will be a lot healthier than where we are today.
Yeah. So what would be a sort of typical, you know, set of perks or utilities that people might get, or, you know, some examples of artists that you've worked with and what those access points might look like?
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff we're working on is still in the works. But I think that the way in which we think about it, right, is that it has to be nuanced and it has to be driven by the community and driven by the artists themselves, right? So we're working with was one artist, for example, whose name I can't mention, but they're an amazing DJ and they layer a lot of their songs and the stems of their songs through various technologies that they're using right now. And so songs are compiled in stem form and could have, like, you know, anywhere from 20 stems to 150 stems, depending on the production. But a drum beat, for example, is a stem, or a guitar riff is a stem, or various vocals are stems. And one of the things we've talked about, and one of the things that we're thinking through, is how do you take the layers and those separate pieces and create really interesting and dynamic NFTs for those layers, so that if you're going to a show, you can get one stem that may be different than someone else that's at that show. And as you relate to the community, as you maybe share those NFTs with the community, as you go to more shows, your NFT dynamically changes throughout time. And eventually you come to, you know, like a release of a full song, or, you know, something that's far more personalized and far more personalized towards that experience. I think like those ways in which we're thinking about the NFT technologies are really interesting. Obviously, with that comes invaluable community engagement. And I think, again, like that's the key and core part of this. It's creating that engagement and creating that interest in people coming together as communities. Obviously, of course, we are also talking about, you know, like promo codes and discounts and fan clubs where, you know, there's people that can display their fandom in real ways. But I think the things that are the most interesting to me are the ones in which we can actually get the community to relate to each other and start engaging each other in ways that we haven't maybe touched yet. And so we're doing a lot of experimenting these days to understand what that means. I'll take like this back to things that aren't Web3, right? Like one of the you know, biggest artists that Warner has is The Dead. And that community is so embedded in the world of The Dead. And the artist is, yes, of course, a big part of the community, but the community also is consistently engaging with each other. They're creating the moments, a lot of the moments for each other, right? And how do you ensure that the community is looking to engage together is core to how we're thinking about using Web3 technologies. But again, it doesn't necessarily have to be within that Web3 world, right? When we think about Web3, it's what does the artist feel and what does the community want, as opposed to let's start with Web3 technology and let's take things, start there, and then like let's decide what the community wants, right? Like we have to decide and understand deeply the artist, who their audience is, what they want to think through, what they want their personal and, you know, public profiles to look like, what they want their story to be, what they want their narrative to be. All of that goes into how we think about what we're doing, both in community building, but also in like Web3 community building, which is to say it's really nuanced and it's not, you know, one size fits all. And it's something that we are constantly having to edit and evolve, right? Because like the community will change in real time and be dynamic. And so the goal is obviously to understand what fans want and provides that access to them, but also ensure that they're really engaged in ways that maybe they haven't been so far.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like a really exciting new way of engaging fans. So we've already talked a little bit about the role of NFTs in music, but I also just want to touch on, I know that NFTs or broader Web3 can be seen as a sort of alternative to the traditional music label setup. So I'm just wondering what your approach is.
What I think definitively is the case, and obviously why I'm sitting at a label, right? Like, and again, let's just like take it back to how we think about how the world is evolving. 100 years ago, before the music industry was really productized and before we were putting music out and selling it, what music was ultimately an experience where fans came together with artists to experience the world and experience music in ways that, you know, wasn't possible by just listening to it, right? Like they came together and patrons would help to provide money for specific art pieces, and they were ultimately part of the creation process. And like all of that was happening. And then, you know, at some point, the music industry became the industry because we were able to start putting pieces of songs or, sorry, pieces of sound onto productized format. So in the 1950s, 1940s, vinyl came around, and we were able to put songs on these vinyls. Albums were ultimately created because vinyl could only hold a certain amount of content. And so you get to a place where today, now music is defined as songs and albums because of really the technology that evolved to allow us to get pieces of sound onto hardware and then sell it. But like ultimately, what I think and what we deeply think is that music has always been an experience, has always been something where people come together and there's something personal about it, but something that is oriented towards community again and like fandom and having these public moments that are embedded in with other people, right? And so what we see evolving today is that with each new technology, we're kind of going back to where we were before the hardware started becoming a focus. And so for us, what we want to make sure of for us at Warner, what we want to make sure that we're doing is not necessarily following the trend of technology, because that trend can be ever present and can really affect the way in which we think about where the future is going. And what we're focused on is following the trend of consumption and the trend of creation. So like, how are people creating? How are people consuming? And those things are evolving really quickly, right? Like the way in which kids these days consume and create is far more dynamic and far more active than when I was young, right? Like I tend to be a somewhat more passive consumer, although I have a lot of like, I do a lot of gaming and things, but I tend to be a more passive consumer of things than kids these days because they're growing up as creators themselves. And so when we think about where the future of music is going, we think about this world in which yes, there are ways in which to listen passively to music, but there are also really deep ways in which to engage, be social, interact, also create and personalize experiences for oneself. And then how does a label fit into that world? How does an artist fit into that world, right? Like if an artist is in the business of creating experiences and in the business of creating these moments with their communities, then being an artist is shifting to one in which there's, you know, massive influential and tastemaking authority with their fans and their communities, but there's also a need for these artists to be always on, ever present on platforms, always telling their story, always being authentic, right? Like the word authenticity is obviously used consistently these days. So getting like the right product or format to the right fan on the right platform at the right time, like that is a difficult task to take on by oneself. And then actually rising above the noise. And like, of course, there's going to be more and more noise in front of us is going to take marketing muscle in a real way. And so then how does a label fit into that world? It fits in by enabling these artists to tell their story cohesively across these platforms, and then also also marketing those stories to their fans and engaging those fans, right? And so I actually think the role of a label is incredibly important as the world evolves, if not even more so important than where we are today, which is a difficult task, certainly. But I think artists, that being always on will, of course, be something that artists really need teams for. I do think that there will be a lot of tools that help to facilitate, right? Like help to facilitate a lot of artists' careers. But there are those artists that will require, you know, more handholding and more support. And of course, a lot of the top tier artists that are able to break through the noise will require a lot of handholding and support. And that's true, just by the way, across, you know, Web 2, Web 3, like that is the world as we see it changing. And it will certainly evolve even more as we get into like hardware changing. Like I'm a definitive believer that our hardware is going to change from phones to glasses or some kind of eyewear over this decade. So, and that will make things, you know, even more complex for artists to be able to tell their story across all of these different spaces while everyone is always on in these metaverses, right?
It sounds pretty overwhelming. So changing direction a little bit, why did you end up in music? What was it that drove you to get to where you are?
I ended up in music because, so I am from Romania. I moved when I was young and I didn't speak much English, but my parents are intense Eastern European immigrants that put me in violin when I was four. And I started playing when I first came over. I was in orchestras and playing, you know, with a teacher as well. And I met people through music, and that's how I started communicating with them. So music was always deeply embedded in like my family. We listened to a lot of music when I was growing up, but it just became this communication tool for me. And so it was always deeply embedded in me. I will say that when I graduated from college, it was like the days of Napster, and I wasn't really inspired by the industry. It was very much in a state of like flux. I was working, when I was in college, I was working in a lot of music companies, and that's what I wanted to do. But when I graduated, it just felt like very conservative and risk averse. And it just wasn't something that I thought there was a lot of vision in. I'm sure there was, but I just didn't see it. And so I ended up going into finance for 7 years and was at BlackRock trading and saw like the rise and the crash of the bear market. And by then it wasn't inspiring to me either. So I ended up going back in music, and I have this like deep passion for ensuring that creation gets paid for. I just think that our world is ever evolving, and moralistically, I think that having creators be able to be successful and be able to be paid for the music that they create, but also just like the art that they create, is one of the things that's like tantamount to our world's survival. So I have like a deep passion for this space, and it's the thing that I want to leave the world with. Like, how do you evolve economic models so that artists can survive and thrive by making art? Because that sounds like a world I want to be part of. So yeah.
Really cool. I love that. I also used to run a business that was all about how do we keep the future of creativity commercially viable. I couldn't make the business commercially viable, but it is something that's also very dear to my heart. Thinking about those creativity point of view, are you seeing any interesting innovation when it comes to generative AI? I know it's very much like a hot topic. What cool stuff have you seen in music and AI?
It is a hot topic. I think that the thing, and I'll speak more broadly about it, like I think that the thing that is happening in artificial intelligence is incredibly interesting. I think that it's going to change the world that we live in today. The thing that I think is most exciting is what happened with photography, right? Like all of us are essentially photographers these days, because ultimately like our photos that we put on Instagram or whatever are amazing. Like I can add some filters to my photos and all of a sudden I'm this amazing photographer. And so I've become a creator of these photos and sometimes now videos, right? And those tools opened a massive amount of creativity across our world in a way that could not be predicted. I would say that AI tools are going to move towards sound in a real way, so that creators, that anyone can be a creator of sound and music, and easily and mobily. Today, there are 100,000 songs that are loaded on Spotify on a daily basis. You know, a few years ago, it was half of that. And that's just from getting creators from studio creation to desktop creation, right? And those are AI tools for the most part. Today, we're moving desktop creation to mobile. And that change is going to be substantial and really hard to understand until it actually happens. I mean, like it'll be exponential amount of creation that we'll see, which I think will, of course, create a lot of noise, which I think some people are worried about. I'm less worried about, you know, we try to not worry about the challenges. Of course, the challenges will be there, but I think the thing that's most exciting is that it will just bring up this world of new creation, world of new sound, new genres, new subgenres that will be unimaginable. And I think that that's one of the things that's most exciting. I also think, again, that the more we bring back the world of creation to adults, the better our world will be, right? As a kid, you are drawing and you're creating, you're making sound on a consistent basis. And then at some point you stop doing that because that final product isn't good enough, or, you know, like there's a certain amount of shame that we feel from, like, you know, I used to love to draw, but I cannot draw at all. And so now I don't draw anymore, and I don't paint, and I don't do any of those things. I do create sound, but it's because I think it's decent. And if I didn't think I was good, I would probably not do it, because there are ways in which we as adults judge ourselves and our output. And I think that bringing back the idea of creation to adults as something that is fun and something that is the experience in and of itself, as opposed to the final output, is something that, again, is like a very interesting way in which the world will change. And I think it's very exciting. Again, I think that there's massive challenges to where AI is going. I mean, like, obviously there's a lot of, there's a lot of noise in the space, and it will bring more noise. But I think the things that are like thoroughly exciting about the creation side is that it will bring more creators to the space, but it'll also make experiences the experience of creation an experience in and of itself. And I think that's really exciting.
I absolutely agree, because you could essentially use AI to sort of game the system and like create a chart-topping hit based on a kind of, you know, using the maths of it, of like, you know, this kind of drum beat and this kind of chorus and this kind of combination should create a chart-topping hit. So you could use AI to create that, but then it doesn't have the same feeling in it. And I think you're right that humans add the magic bit. Like if you can just automatically create some of the basics using AI in the same way as sort of ChatGPT could create the sort of copywriting for a website, but actually you want a human to go and make it really good, make it human. And think, I don't know, as somebody outside of the music industry, for me, that would be the sort of exciting opportunity. It's just, I'm making the same point as you back at you. That's the kind of fun bit of, like, you know, if you get ChatGPT or whatever equivalent AI tool to kind of almost like do your homework for you, then what is the interesting bit that humans add? I think that's where it gets really fun. And some of that human connection piece is part of it when it comes to music.
Yeah, I mean, like, definitively people will be able to create professional level songs on mobile, right? Like that with AI tools, it's already happening these days. The thing that is going to be the separator, right, is like the story of the artist and who they are and the narrative. Again, in our world is evolving away from songs being the core part of the experience of listening to the artist, to people, consumers, creators, fans, wanting access to the artist at all times, wanting access to their story, their narrative, the things that they put out in the world. And so, yes, I think a song can be replicated. Ultimately, that person, that creator, right? Like those experiences, those moments, that community, those are the things that can't be replicated. And those are the things that, you know, are incredibly exciting, and why we need to be looking forward towards the opportunities as opposed to necessarily focused on the challenges of new technology.
Totally. Though, speaking of challenges, I'd be interested to know what the biggest challenges have been in your role at Warner. You know, Web3 is quite a big beast, and sort of trying to get things moving in a large organization is a big challenge. How have you gone about getting that buy-in? And yeah, what have been the kind of challenges in terms of bringing to life something like a whole Web3 unit within an organization like Warner?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt that there was a trend towards the challenge, right? Towards Web3 over the course of the last couple of years, and that we were all kind of stuck in front of our computers looking for ways in which to engage with digital things. When we invested in Dapper Labs in 2019, I had just started at Warner, and 2 months later we invested. And I remember taking, a picture of CryptoKitty to approval process, and people thought I was crazy. But it was, not long after that trend towards NFTs, you know, became like all the rage. I think the thing that has been the biggest challenge is not necessarily getting people to listen to a conversation about Web3. It's just ensuring that people are doing, quote unquote, the right things, right? During the pandemic and during kind of like the bull market on Web3, there was just a lot of consistency of news saying like, hey, this person made this much money and this person made this much money in the space, and ensuring that the way in which we spoke to artists was nuanced and focused on the fan was key to the way in which we needed to communicate. Because of course, there were people at the company or specific artists that wanted to jump in immediately and start doing something. But the fans of artists are long-term. They are in it for the artist and for that community, and they can be burned. And what we didn't want was to exploit the community in a short-term way. And so I think the biggest challenge was ensuring that we were nuanced and stayed focused and steady in what we were doing and really creative. And I think that we made some really creative moments and are still building, but ultimately the work that we've done has stayed up, right? Like, because we didn't jump in and start just dropping NFTs, what has happened, and I think, is that we've won the trust of our artists to be able to speak to them about the space. And so we've continued to work and do more and more, as opposed to kind of jumping in and losing trust and then not doing anything now. And so every kind of month, we're doing more with more artists and taking on more projects. But it's because we didn't immediately jump into a craze that I think that some others did. And that's been really gratifying too, because it would have been easy. And I will say that there were moments where, you know, people were just making insane money. I was like, oh my gosh, are we doing the wrong thing? Like, should we be jumping in? Should we be making millions of dollars and all this stuff? And I'm glad that we kind of stayed the course and we're really focused on ensuring that everything we did in the Web3 space was based first in what does this artist want? What do they want to tell their story with? Like, what does the community want? And then how do we do that consistently over the long term so that we're not, just dropping something, but we've got like anything that we're doing, we've got a roadmap of work that is, you know, a year long that we understand we have to do to build a sustainable community in this space.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Because I'm sure there's other listeners out there that are sort of facing some of the same challenges and probably also asking the question of like, should we have gone more of on a cash grab? And usually the answer is no, because you end up losing, like some of these bigger brands can end up losing respect if there isn't that kind of thought through approach. So shifting things finally, I just want to make sure that the episode is super actionable, or that every episode is super actionable for listeners. So where do you think people ought to be going and learning more, especially when it's something like or anything music and Web3 focused or activations to go and have a look at? Where do you tend to send people, or suggestions, tips, anything?
Yeah, for sure. For us, right, and I've said this to a lot of people internally, it's a little hard to be a fan and be monetized for music these days, right? Like, you can buy some merch, you can go to a tour. But outside of that, it's actually a little bit hard to be a fan. So what I've said, and this is like the generic response, but what I've said to people is like, go be a fan of something, and like whatever it is, if it's your making pottery, go find the Discord on pottery and become a fan of that community and really like start taking it up and seeing like what people are doing in that space, right? If it's similarly for an artist, like go be a fan of them and go understand like what they're doing and experience those moments and understand what their community might want. So I would start there. And then, you know, obviously a lot of the different, you know, pieces of that puzzle are like, check out the different platforms that they're speaking on and that community is based in. A lot of it is the world of Discord. In terms of what I'm reading and what I'm looking at, I, you know, spend a lot of time following Masari. I, you know, listen to CoinDesk podcasts all the time. Water and Music is a great resource specifically on the music side. Spend a lot of time with like Decrypt University. Also just a ton of various like newsletters and other access points that I spend time with. So just spending a lot of time reading, et cetera. But I think those are like the key ones that I would say are good starting places. But again, for me, I think like the focus needs to be on that community and on the on being a fan first, because I found that the best way that I learned was to just become deep into, I mean, like I already had a finance background, so I just started trading on my own, but that led me into Discord groups that I was staying on until 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. And I just like deeply went into this space. I think it's really hard to understand the space without becoming like getting really into it and becoming really passionate about it. Like I spent several months not doing much else besides like getting really interested in Discord groups and going a little crazy and being a little manic in them, honestly. Once I got out of that stage, I think that I had learned so much. And I think like just being a fan of certain communities and getting embedded in them is one of the best ways to go.
I love that. And I think a lot of Web3 does bring out people's slightly obsessive nature.
Yeah. It's a little manic sometimes, but yes, yeah.
Well, it's been super interesting to hear about your career and your work at Warner. So lastly, Warner, where can people find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn, Warner Alexandra. You can find me on Instagram, on Twitter, on 0ANARX on both of those.
Well, yeah, I've really enjoyed our chat. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. If you've liked this episode, please do give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to find our talent collective you can apply to be part of, or post your Web3 vacancies on our jobs board. If you've got any questions or comments, just tweet us at womenofweb3co, and we'll see you next Thursday morning.